traditions with us this evening?
I'm a grateful alcoholic. My name is George.
George!
Little review on Tradition 5. First thing I want to do is read the long form of the fifth tradition. It says, each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. We've been reviewing a lot of these. I wanted to read something that's, I found a couple of little things about something with the fifth tradition that in the early days, how it was done. It's a little different today, how we carry the message. But in the old days, Ruth Hawk, who was Bill's secretary, talks in the early days about the meetings themselves, and she says, the courage and confidence was also bolstered daily by the meetings themselves. Ruth Hawk described them. They were structured by to the extent that they always one speaker and Bill, maybe for a half an hour, and a long coffee session, a real get-together. They were often there till 12 o'clock, started at 8. She also said, at that time, we did not go into step work, did not have 90-day requirements, no birthdays, no recognition was made if you were sober for a week or for a year. If you felt you would like to speak in a year or a month or in 2 weeks, they let you get up and speak, and they didn't throw you out even if you were drunk. They felt that it was encouraging, hoping some would stick. Each time Bill spoke, he had a different approach. There was no pre-formulated message, and the talks apparently varied in length as much as it did in subject. The other thing is, you know, we always say, my name is George and I'm an alcoholic. That comes from the Oxford groups. Bill picked that up from the Oxford groups. And then there's a saying of the signs that, you know, live and let live, easy does it, but for the grace of God, first things first. Some of the saws, and they called it, were used long ago in the late 30s. First things first, easy does it, live and let live. Because they appeared in the first edition of the Big Book at the end of chapter of the family afterward, it's probable that the use of these slogans originated with Bill and were brought to them from Vermont. Old saws, new teeth. And they talk about that as different ways of the way they carried the message back then. The message has changed over the years because of a lot of things, and the sixth tradition is going to talk a lot about that. But going back to that fifth tradition, it says the proverb, says the old proverb, shoemaker, stick to thy last. Trite, yes, but very true for us of AA, how well we need to heed the principle that it is better to do one thing supremely well than many things badly, because it has now become plain enough that only a recovered alcoholic can do much for the sick alcoholic. A tremendous responsibility has descended upon us all, an obligation so great that it amounts to a sacred trust. For our kind, those who suffer alcoholism, recovery is a matter of life and death. So the Society of Alcoholics Anonymous cannot, dare not, ever be diverted from its primary purpose. Temptation to do otherwise will come apparently. Seeing fine works afoot in the field of alcohol, we shall sorely be tempted to loan out the name and credit of Alcoholics Anonymous to them. As a movement, we shall be beset to finance and endorse other causes. Should our present success continue, people will commence to assert that AA is a brand new way of life, maybe a new religion, capable of saving the world. We shall be told that this is, it's a burden of duty to show the modern society how they ought to live. Oh, very attractive these projects and ideas can be. How flattering to imagine that we might be chosen to demonstrate the old and mystic promise, the first shall be last and the last shall be first. Fantastic, you say, yet some of our well-wishers have begun to say such things. Fortunately, most of us are convinced that these are perilous speculations, alluring ingredients, that new heady wine that now being offered, each bottle marks success. Of this subtle vintage, we dare never drink too deeply. May we never forget that we are live by the grace of God on borrowed time, that anonymity is better than a claim, and that for us as a movement, poverty is better than wealth. And may we reflect that the ever-deepening conviction that we shall never be at our best except when you only the primary spiritual aim of AA, that is carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers from alcoholism. Now, believe it or not, that was written in 1948. And since then, you know, this little book came out, the 12 Steps Illustrated, and in it it says, no matter how low, no matter how different our personal concerns, we are bound together by a common responsibility to carry the message to the suffering alcoholic. You know, we talked last week that sometimes the suffering alcoholic is not the newcomer. Sometimes it's somebody in this room with a lot of time. And we've heard that many times. And it tells us in the fifth tradition, I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to always be there. And for that, I am responsible. And going from that, I want to jump to the questions that we've been asking ourselves of how that tradition relates. I mean, the fifth tradition logically is going to lead to the sixth, and we're going to get to that in a minute. But these are the questions to ask yourself about the primary purpose, and whether it's a primary purpose within yourself, the group, or in other relationships, it still holds true. And the first one is, do I ever cop out saying I am not a group so that our tradition doesn't, this tradition does not apply to me? Am I willing to explain firmly to the newcomer the limitations of AA help, even if he gets mad at me for not giving him a loan? Have I today promised, imposed on an AA member for special favor or consideration simply because I'm a fellow alcoholic? Am I willing to 12-step the next newcomer without regard to who or what is in it for me? Do I help my group in every way I can to fulfill our primary purpose? Do I remember that AA old-timers too can be alcoholics who still suffer? Do I try both to help them and to learn from them? Tradition 6 is where we are now. And in Tradition 6, it tells us very simply that an AA group would never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise unless monies of property and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. It says in the it says money, property, and authority. And it's, to us, it's money, property, and prestige. When I came in here, those were my three higher powers. You know, and that's how I got to look at this. I got to individualize this tradition because it's really important. Tradition 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 are going to reaffirm Tradition 5. It's going to make us ask to give up things. The short form, for me, to look at traditions 2, 5, and 6, that there is an authority and it's God. The fifth tradition is to carry the message, and the which is our spiritual entity, which is the fifth tradition, and the sixth tradition is our spiritual aim. Not to get bogged down in money, property, or prestige, because it's going to divert us from what we're here to do, to help the sick and suffering alcoholic. We have to divide the spiritual from the material. There's a great story when Ebby went to go see Bill. He had to take some money out of his pocket, got to get on the train, had to go down to Brooklyn, cost him a couple of cents to ride the train, and then he carried the message. Little money, a lot of spirituality. All right, and that's really how we separate it. Money and spirituality only mix in the seventh tradition in the basket. We'll talk about some of the violations that we know about that probably next week. So, spiritual entity, yes. Material possession as a group, no. Cooperation, yes. Affiliation, no. That's what our sixth tradition says. In 1939, in Pass It On, which is what I read for you today, talks about what the groups did at one time. And there were some examples of why this fifth and sixth tradition started getting very confused. There's a guy by the name of Bert Taylor. Bert Taylor, in 1939, ran a tailor shop in New York. And what he did, AA was in trouble. The book was just coming out, and they didn't have money for it. And he didn't have the money to give the AA, so he got in touch with someone who he was paying a note on, and he put his tailor shop up for I think it was $1,000. Because they had a $500 deposit on the books at that time. And he put up $1,000 and signed his tailor shop up as collateral. Well, we didn't have enough money to get his tailor shop back, and he lost it. So money was mixing at that time. In 1943, we talk about Marty Mann. Now, Marty Mann is a real special case. And I'm going to read a little bit about Marty Mann, because Marty Mann was very friendly with Bill, and she came in to the fellowship through Dr. Thibault, and what ended up happening was she was the first one to hear the message of you're not alone anymore. And Marty Mann, I'm going to get the exact spot on it. Marty Mann went to, I'll read it from this one. I have it in two places because I know me. That's the liquor tradesman. That's the last one. Where did I put Marty? Marty Mann in 1943 started what we call today the education of alcoholism for the purpose of teaching alcoholics about AA. In 1943, 4 years experience, Mary had entered the first session of the newly founded Yale School of Alcohol Studies, the country's first such education program. The summer marked a turning point in her life. She became convinced that public attitudes toward the disease and its suffering needed to be changed, that it was her calling to work in the field of alcohol education. She practically wanted to help women alcoholics who she felt suffered a double stigma. The National Committee of Education on Alcoholism, Inc., the organization Marty founded, opened its office October 2, 1944. NCEA eventually now became the National Council of Alcoholism, received an enthusiastic endorsement from the Grapevine, itself at that time only 4 months old. It also received support from many prominent and some not so prominent people, whose names, including those of Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob Smith, appeared on the committee's letterhead. But they're also the co-founders, and the names on the letter gave the impression that the two groups were connected. We weren't connected. They used the name to solicit funds, and what ended up happening is that the people in AA were getting very mad because it looked like we were now in line with the Alcoholic Foundation at that time, which we were, not the Alcoholic Foundation, the NEC, the Educational Conference on Alcoholism. To confuse matters further, Marty also spoke across the country on behalf of a new organization, breaking her anonymity. She always said she was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the resulting confusion was heightened in 1946 when they mailed out a large public appeal for funds. On the letterhead, it appears, was sent to some AA groups, and Dick S., a trustee, wrote Bill, who was away from New York at the time, if the letter should ever get into the hands of the AA mailing list, quoting AA throughout the soliciting of funds on the letterhead, it carries both the name of Dr. Bob Smith as a sponsor, no little hell would be popping. In other words, all hell would be breaking loose. Adding to the problem, the work the AAs had, the problem of anonymity breaks, the fact that the NCAA got most of its operating funds from the public, so that means that we were accepting public funds, which at one time we were. And we had to stop it because it was causing many problems within the fellowship and within the membership itself. Bill had finally persuaded that the total non-affiliation was the only solution. Within a year, he and Dr. Bob withdrew from the NCEA, and Marty said that she would discontinue publicly identifying herself as a member. There's a story in the 12 and 12 that talks about a public relations man who decides that he's going to get an opportunity to make some money, and he was sober a very short time, and they were offering him a lot of money. But what they wanted him to do is they wanted him to work for this liquor place and endorse is basically what it's about, endorse that this liquor company through publicity. And the Liquor Trade Association wanted to hire him, an AA member, as an educator. Its members wanted to teach that too much grog is bad for everybody and alcoholics cannot drink at all. The only one that no alcoholics can't drink well is the alcoholic himself. Everybody else that knows us knows we can't drink well. So far, so good. But they further appeared that in public, they wished to stress the fact that the educator, Mr. X, was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That sometime, something else again. The public at once would think that Alcoholics Anonymous had gone into the field of education via the liquor industry. If this happened, the Drys would instantly hire another AA member for educational purposes. There would, that would land us, of course, smack in the middle of an endless controversy. They simply could not take sides in the fight and do business with sick alcoholics, too. The would-be educator showed up at the New York office asking for advice, and of course they told him that we thought the factual education to be a very good thing, and that the public relation expert and a citizen would certainly had a perfect right to take the job. But did he think he should advertise his AA membership at the same time? Our members got the point, he said. The Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. It came first. I certainly won't be the guy to land AA in big time trouble. And this might really do it. Our friend had summed up the whole endorsement problem. He saw never before that we could lend the AA name to any cause other than our own. That means in a meeting to another alcoholic. Long afterward, we saw something else. The more that AA minded its own business, the greater the general influence would become. Medicine and religion, psychiatry began to borrow some of our ideas and experiences. So did research, rehabilitation, and education. All sorts of therapeutic groups began to spring up. They dealt with gambling, divorce, delinquency, dope addiction, mental illness, and the like. They too borrowed from AA, but they made their own adaptions. They worked in their own fields, and they did not have to endorse them to tell them how to live. When I came in here, there was, I think, 132 different 12-step fellowships when I got here. Today, I just found out that there was 250, and today I heard there was over 300. So it is growing, and some of them have some funny kind of, there's some funny stories and about how they came. But what AA did do was they lent them with the adoption of our 12 steps, those 300 groups, but never let them copy any of our literature. And Narcotics Anonymous was forced, and I'll use Narcotics Anonymous because it's a good one to use, to write their own book because of that. And because of that, and it's a good first step, and that was where they adapted their slant on what the 12 steps are. Al-Anon follows always almost exactly. You have GA, OA, CA. Somebody said to me, what's the difference? You know, I want to go to a BB group. I said, I belong to a BB group. They said, what's a BB group? I said, it's not an AA group. There's so many different things. There was somebody talked to that the other night about Lip Loss Anonymous. There's Gangsters Anonymous. There's all kinds of anonymous programs. The only one that I don't know of is there's an Anonymous program. But we can have fun with this, but there's a lot of real sense of that there are so many problems. But the fundamental thing is the primary purpose, to carry the message of whatever that fellowship is to that person who is suffering from that affliction, whether it be addictions, there are all kinds of addiction programs, and I don't want to get into all the different fellowships, and they all have their own 12 steps, but they're all based on our 12 steps. So like when I came in here, my sponsor always told me, this is the parent. And all the others are the children. And they all grew out of this one. And AA doesn't do all things for all people. There's a lot of other things that need to be done. If I had a problem with eating, I sure as heck am not going to do it in an AA meeting. Although, I know people that do that. We talked about the fellow who came in who dressed kind of funny in the third tradition, but he had a requirement not to drink. And that's the only requirement to be in this room. It's not a requirement not to eat too much ice cream. Although I don't know if there's an ice cream anonymous. There might be. That's one I got to look up now. But we have that right to do that. We can cooperate with them and lend them. Now, when we get into certain things, the first three traditions were on group matters. We talked about the group matters. Now we got into tradition. Now we're talking about the group and AA as a whole, and that's what we're discussing. And eventually we're going to get to AA as a whole and the world at large. And the reason we have these conflicts in the traditions goes back. Marty Mann was a prime example of Bill himself with the publicity is a prime example of the breach of the traditions. In 1962, to go up a little further, because we're in the treatment capital of the world, I understand, or the recovery capital of the world. In 1962, there was a law passed, and it was called the Javits Bill. And the Javits Bill gave government money to treatment centers, fractional houses, because I'm not going to call them halfway houses, drying out farms, anybody in the recovery field to try and make recovery. And it started that way. And from that, those endorsements from the government, they became, a lot of people in early AA became counselors, or believed to become counselors, and they were treating other alcoholics. They weren't sober a very long time, and here they were trying to treat other alcoholics. Eventually, because it was outside money and not our own money, eventually there was qualifications to become counselors, where today you have to go to college and get a certificate. So that was one of the things that happened. And members that went to work, when they came into this room, if they worked, and I've worked in the industry, I am an Alcoholics Anonymous member. There are doctors in this room. There's no such thing as an AA doctor. There's no such thing as an AA lawyer. There's no such thing as an AA bum. The only thing in AA that you got is a member. And we're all equal when we walk in here. So it doesn't matter who you are, what you are, what your affiliation is, what you do for a living, what you do outside of it, you do. And there's a part that they talk about the two hats. But alcoholics only have one head, so you can only wear one hat at a time. So if I'm in here, I'm a member. If I'm working in the field, that's a job I do. It's not who I am. It's a job I do. And I see a lot of people who think, because they work in a facility of some kind or another, that that's their recovery. No, that's their job. And I was told that when I went to work in the field. I don't care if you work there 5 days a week. You better find meetings, because that is not going to keep you sober, because you're getting paid for that. We don't get paid for going to AA. That's one of the many things. And then when we talk about the different kinds of things that go on, the fundraisers, that's another good one. Picnics, fundraisers, I know this group is having one. There are no AA picnics. There are no AA dances. What we have is, there are no AA retreats. What we have is members of AA that go to picnics, that go to fundraisers, that go to retreats. It's not an AA function. The only function AA has is an AA meeting. That's what AA has. We do those other things, and that some of them are good, some of them are not so good, and we align ourselves with some not good, so good stuff. As time went on, we learned from those. With that freedom that we get in the fourth tradition, there's a tremendous responsibility. We're free to make our own decisions. Groups do all kinds of things. Let's talk about the non-AA announcement versus the AA announcement. There are non-AA, some groups have non-AA announcements, and one of the things is, if you're having non-AA announcements, with all due respect to any group, you should do it before you do the opening prayer, before the meeting starts, because once the meeting starts, you're in AA now, and there should be no non-AA now. Little things that, they're not big deals, but they divert us from the one thing we need to do, which is our primary purpose. I wasn't taking a shot, Chris. Which is divert us from our primary purpose. So our primary purpose is to help the alcoholic who suffers. And we have to be careful how we handle that. We're going to talk about the hospitals and the clubhouses, because this is all important, because the sixth tradition really is an outgrowth of tradition five. And the sixth tradition, like I said, those were my higher powers when I got in here. On an individual place, I wanted a pat on the back when my sponsor used to say to me, okay, George, I want you to just come in Wednesday night. I'm not going to mention the name of the place, because that's an implied affiliation that I did it in. And I was told to clean up the room, vacuum it, wash the floors, and not tell anybody. I had to do that for a year and a half in the name of the place I lived at, which is around the corner, so you guys can figure that one out. But that's what I had to do. And I was not allowed to tell anybody, because that would be, I was looking for a pat on the back. Money, property, prestige was what that was about. And I couldn't get paid for doing that, although I thought I was worth some money to do that. And there's a story when we get to another tradition about a guy who took care of one of our clubhouses. All right, so here we get to the hospitals, and we talk about the hospitals. And when we talk about the hospitals, we have to remember Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob worked in a hospital, and he helped over 5,000 alcoholics, all right? Now, he got paid as a doctor, but he did a lot of outside work, and that's a very hard line for a lot of people to draw, because there was no such thing as an AA hospital, although we tried to get into them. They all failed when we did. The urgency was tempted that some AA groups go into setting up drying out places for their own, hiring AA managers, nurses, securing the services of the visiting physician, where it had been done under the direct auspices of an AA group. It has almost always backfired. It has been the group, it had put the group into businesses of all kinds, which few AAs know anything at all. Too many clashing personalities. Now, you imagine 60 of us getting together and getting into a business. We have 60 different opinions on who's going to run it. Each one of us would want to run it. Nobody wants to be the second in command. So it's better that we don't get involved in businesses as a group. We have been obligated to see that AA group is a primary, is a spiritual entity, that a group, the less business it has to transact, the better. While on this theme, we ought to be noted that practically all group schemes to finance or guarantee hospital bills for fellow members have failed also. Not only do many such loans go unpaid, they also are always out the controversial question of the group of which prospect do we send to the hospital, to that particular hospital. And in other instances, the group driven to acute need for medical aid. They have started public money-raising campaigns to set up AA hospitals in their communities. These efforts also went for nothing. And we're talking about in the beginning, and this was written in 1947, and it still holds true, because I know some members who have opened up treatment facilities, and they do very well, but it's not an AA treatment facility. It's members who are in a business who had money and the ability to put it together to run it. Then they have the clubs, and the clubhouses are my favorites, because at the beginning we had the 24th Street Clubhouse, and we had a club. It was an interesting place, the former Artists and Illustrations Club on West 24th Street. What excitement. A couple of old members signed the lease, they painted, and we scrubbed. We had a home. Wonderful memories of the days and nights of the first club would always linger. But it must be admitted that those memories are static. Growth brought headaches. Growing pains, we now call that. How serious they seem then. Dictators ran amok. Drunks fell on the floor or disturbed the meeting. Steering committees tried to nominate their friends to succeed them and found that to their dismay, even sober drunks couldn't be steered. Sometimes they could be scarily get up the rent. Card players went impervious to any suggestions to talk to newcomers. Nowadays, most clubs don't have any card playing in them. Lady secretaries got each other's hair. A cooperation was formed to take over the club room, lease, and then had officials. Should they be directors of that clubhouse, or should they be a rotating committee like in AA? Most of them ended up having officials, directors. The first clubhouse was known, of course, as an AA clubhouse. The corporation holding the lease was titled Alcoholics Anonymous of New York. Now, we're not very smart as alcoholics sometimes. And the reason for that, because a little later on, they realized that they incorporated the whole state of New York, not the 24th Street Clubhouse, which is what they were trying to do. And of course, the incorporation should have covered just the 24th Street Clubhouse. Throughout the country, most clubs started like the original clubhouse did in the 24th Street Clubhouse. If you look around here now, I can name within a 10-mile radius about 15 to 20 clubhouses right in this area. And I'm sure there's many multitudes more in the area. So Manhattan was the central clubhouse. And they took in the five boroughs in New Jersey, and they got a little upset because the New Jersey members got tired of it, and they opened their own clubhouse and stopped supporting it. And what ended up happening is, like most bad kids, we wanted them to support it. And we were a little annoyed about it, and we couldn't understand why, because aren't the children supposed to take care of your parents when you get old? And that's how they were looking at it. But what ended up happening, even though it irked the New York members, eventually the clubhouses started doing their own things. It's when they started getting involved in affiliation. And that's, you know, cooperation and affiliation is a very thin line. Now, what we do, and I like to use it, look at the example that we have today, the courts. The courts themselves today send us lots of people to be introduced into Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the things the courts do is they give you these sheets, has the name of the group, has the what time the meeting was, and then you sign it. And somebody comes in and it's not an AA function, it's not a group function, it's something the court's prescribed. Now we gotta go back to when that started. When that started, people signed that, and not, we're more infiltrated today, so I think there's a lot less of it. But what ended up happening, if somebody had their paper signed, like they do today, and they went out and got drunk, a judge could order that piece of paper to be put into the record. And if it was put into the record, it's now a public record. And they could actually have subpoenaed some of the members of that particular group to come down and they can say, well, was he at the meeting? Now we're supposed to be anonymous. So here's an example of where we're trying to cooperate with the courts, and there's some old timers I know to this day will not sign one of those sheets. They'll tell them, sorry, that's not AA. Old timers don't have to sign those sheets. No member has to sign that sheet because it's, we're cooperating, but a lot of people do because we're infiltrated so much today. But it is a dangerous thing for us to do because if somebody gets called in, it looks like it's an applied affiliation with the court system. And we are not the court system because we can't guarantee anybody that's coming out of jail with a piece of paper that they're going to stay sober. No facility can we make that promise to any human being for any reason. What we do is we welcome them here. We tell them what we're here for and what we do. You know, so we affiliate with everybody. We cooperate, but we don't affiliate with anybody. One of my favorite lines in the sixth tradition, and it says, "We of AA would be the first to say that many fine enterprises do a lot of good with a lot of money. To these efforts, money is usually primary; it's its lifeblood. But money is not the lifeblood of AA. With us, it is very secondary. Even in small quantities, it is scarcely more than a necessary nuisance, something we wish we could do without entirely. Why is that so?" All right? We explain this easy enough. We don't need money. The core of our AA procedure is one alcoholic helping another, whether that be sitting on a curbside, in a home, in a meeting. It's the message, not the place. It's the talk, not the collection. That does the work. Just places to meet and talk, that's about all AA needs. Beyond these, a few small offices, a few secretaries, their desks, a few dollars a piece a year, easily met by voluntary contributions. Trivial, indeed, are our expenses. Now, if you think about how many times, and I know there's a bunch of people in this room that have sat outside when there was no meeting with another alcoholic, whether it be at a coffee shop or outside a place, and spent hours talking to somebody. That is our primary purpose, for the sick and suffering. We get the opportunity to make those things more possible in meeting places, in clubhouses. So, you know, when I think of the sixth tradition on a personal level, when I came in here, it was the car, the house, the amount of money my job was paying me. And as I stayed here and started losing those things for various reasons, I realized it had nothing to do with material. It had everything to do with the spiritual. The spirituality that, because money diverted me, because I was in pursuit of it, so I didn't have time, I needed the job, so I wouldn't go to as many meetings, and my spirituality was hurt by it. Prestige, I had to have the best job there was, you know, I wanted to be a head of a union, which I was at one point, made me very important, kept me very empty inside. Property, houses, cars, they're all gone. While I was drinking, I drank them away. I gave them away. So when I got here, I found out those were the things that kept me from my primary purpose, which was to stay sober and focus on sobriety and then help another alcoholic. So as I stayed here, I found that those things are good, they're not bad things, but I never knew how to apply them until I started doing the traditions and understanding that they have a place and they have a way of being used. And when they go amok, what ends up happening is groups die, individuals die. And I didn't want that because this is life and death. So I think that's enough for six, and we'll review it next week, and we'll talk about seven. Thanks for letting me chair. I love long.